Good morning and greetings from the Astrology Chalet in Rosendale, New York. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, your astrologer for the next hour or so. And I am here with the somewhere in between reading for Sagittarius. This is my eighth in the series, and I am really eager to read for you Sagittarians and Sag Rising. I know I'm not supposed to play favorites with the Zodiac, but Sagittarius is just a really interesting sign. I consider it so largely because it is the home of the galactic center, the core of our galaxy. Sagittarius, a star, is the supermassive black hole at the center. You even have a black hole named after your sign. And then also the great attractor, the focal point of Laniakea, the kind of watershed of all of our local galaxies, 100,000 of them or so, find a common focal point, a common kind of home in right in the middle of Sagittarius. I am recording in a different setting than I normally do here in Ulster County, New York, close to home. I thought I would get a shift of energy, a change of scene, get out in the country, a bit away from the fire engines going by every 15 minutes, and Black Lives Matter protests interrupting things, get a change of energy. I've been working on this whole project now. I'm into pretty much 2 months solid working on it every day. I'm eager to get to the end, but not that eager, because I'm going to be sorry to leave it behind. However, I've got so much momentum and energy and so many ideas cooking that I kind of have a feeling I'm going to keep developing this. And the spring reading is coming right up, where I'm going to emphasize certain things a little bit more than I'm emphasizing in this reading. In this discussion, I'm going to, well, first of all, it's a de novo look at your chart. I have not reread the somewhere in between written reading. That all seems like it was so long ago and so far away. I think now today is the 19th of the 19th of January. Pluto enters Aquarius tomorrow evening, in about 36 hours from now, from what I'm reading. I finished the written readings on the 8th. Wow, it's really been almost 12 days. Yeah, how about that? So anyway, here we are in having arrived at the most significant sign, Sagittarius. Not most of all, but foundational for understanding astrology. I'm working with the solar chart. The solar chart is not the chart of the person. So I want to give my 1 minute elevator pitch for the solar chart before I go on and explain what this thing is. Astrology makes a very big deal out of having the time and place exactly right for the casting of a natal chart. I understand that. I believe in that. My friend and esteemed colleague and sister in pursuit of unraveling the unknown, Cindy Tice Ragusa, Sagittarius, work hard. Really, she does quite a bit of the work to find out when exactly things happened. And we are untrusting of any situation where it's not quite clear when something happened. I call that the phenomenon of the spinning chart with birth times. I have a karma of making everyone call up their mom. I sit there and I sit wherever we are and ask them, is your mom around? Give her a call. Find out when you were born. But solar chart astrology is another thing. It's almost like halfway between tarot and astrology, because you're reading a spread, and the spread is not directly based on you. It's based on the reference sign. The reference sign is whether we're talking, in the case of Sagittarius, Sagittarius rising. Well, that's the reference sign. That's your ascendant. Or Sagittarius sun. We just presume the sun is the reference sign. Astrology does a lot of this more than most people know. For example, the part of fortune can become the reference sign if you're going to read the chart of fortune. So what's that little thing with the X in the circle? Well, that's the part of fortune. It's a calculation based on the sun, the moon, and the rising sign. And you can then calculate that, calculate the chart, make sure your day-night rule is set correctly, and then you turn the part of fortune, for example, well, then the new moon chart, in the new moon chart, the part of fortune is rising. See that? That's the part of fortune. This is the Sagittarius new moon on December 1st, 2024. That's the main chart that I'm using. But in the new moon chart, the part of fortune is always rising. But that's just based on the sun, moon, ascendant calculation. But most charts are not set for the new moon. So there's a way to read the chart where you just take the part of fortune, you turn that, you pretend that's the first house. Astrology does a lot of this. What the solar chart is the chart for the sign and not the person. Now you think, well, what good is that? Well, it works pretty good if you know what the limitations are. Personally, it was the solar chart that got me into astrology, because even though I had quite a bit of exposure to astrology, I couldn't understand what it was for. It seemed overly complex and full of all these fancy words and all this stuff. And then I started reading the horoscope in the New York Post in the early 1990s, written by the eminent, magnificent, the one, the only, Patrick Walker. And he gave a voice to the planets. And it was his voice that I listened to, heard, that I could really hear some presence of soul coming through. And then for the next, basically, well, year, or I read the column, and then one day I thought, I can't stand it. How can he be writing something so germane, so beautiful? So, well, how does he do this? So I went and bought an ephemeris. I don't have one of those laying around here, but I went and bought the Rosicrucian, everyone's favorite conspiracy, the Rosicrucian ephemeris, and started hacking the Patrick Walker horoscope right out of the New York Post with my kind of an abbreviated version of my pencil kit, not even using a chart, using the ephemeris and the Aleister Crowley tarot and the horoscope cut out of the Post. Figured out astrology doing this. Then I got into Chiron and Pluto and minor planet discoveries. I didn't stop there, obviously, but solar chart astrology gives you enough to have a context and a framework and to say something that is at least interesting. I hope it is. And if not interesting, well, it's entertaining. And even if what I'm saying doesn't really make that much sense to you, you can say, well, what you're saying doesn't make sense, but here's what does make sense. And then there's kind of a dialogue in your mind, and that meets the dialogue in my mind, and maybe we learn something and have some fun. And I mean, look, it's more fun than the average codependency and trauma website. So astrology is pretty good at handling serious spiritual and psychological issues because it provides such an open framework. One last pitch for the astrology chart. These slices of the pie are kind of mansions of heaven. Each is just a sixth, approximately, in this chart anyway, 30 degree slice of the sky. But there's 12 houses overlaid by 12 signs. That's a lot of viewpoints. Normally, we're used to one viewpoint. Bam, accept this, or or you're going to get a ticket. You know, wear a mask. That's it. No other viewpoints allowed. One viewpoint. Astrology, to do it the way that I do it, you look at everything 12 ways, and then the lines between the houses, the house cusps and the sign cusps, in this case, the same thing, each of the houses provides a kind of an extra blended viewpoint between the two. I'll add some of that into this reading just to demonstrate how that works. All right. So having gone on for a bit here, Let's talk about Sagittarius in a little more detail, but it's than I have mentioned, but not that much more detail. The detailed part is that when the sign under which or through which you were born contains the center of the galaxy and the center of the 100,000 galaxy kind of structure cluster, now I have two resources. We want to add the Salacia resource, and let's add the Laniakea resource. Laniakea is Hawaiian for great heaven, and the great heaven described as named by Brent Tully, the great wonderful Dr. Brent Tully at the University of Hawaii, kind enough to grant me an hour and a half interview about the great, an astrologer, one of the great astrophysicists of our day. I love the ones who will talk to me because it shows they're open-minded. They don't just slam the book on me when they find out that I'm an astrologer. Brent Tully mapped out the direction of flow of the 100,000 nearest galaxies. They're all going in the same direction. They're all going toward a point in mid-Sagittarius, I think currently at 1407. That's called the Great Attractor. Discovery first announced in the 1980s, and then about 20, 30 years later, Tully figured out the rest of the equation as best we can figure it out. We don't really know what is prodigious enough to be a gravitational anomaly that is drawing toward it 100,000 galaxies, and there's nothing like it anywhere near us, but they are typical of the universe. The nearest one is all the way back, that it's that way out that window, called Pisces Perseus. It's far larger. But my point is that the most massive gravitational anomaly anywhere near us is in Sagittarius. Then there's one that's right nearby the core of our galaxy, aforementioned Sagittarius A star. That's right in Sagittarius. One's in late Sagittarius, and I draw these into every chart. Every chart. There's Sag. GA, Great Attractor. GC, Galactic Center. GA is right at the middle. Galactic Center is approximately 14 degrees away at about 27 Sagittarius, 13, 14 degrees away. That's a pretty cosmic sign. It is, I think, of all the signs, the sign based, yours, Sagittarius, is the one most based on something real rather than, for example, you look up in Taurus, that's supposed to be a constellation that looks like a bull. And if anyone remembers the planet Arium, episode of South Park, which is my encyclopedia of Americana. Everything I ever learned, worth anything I learned from dogs and South Park. The kids say, "This place is boring. All the constellations look the same." I agree with that. I don't think that whatever is supposed to be a bull in Taurus looks much like a bull. I still think Taurus is Taurus. No argument there. But with Sagittarius, we get this sign that the ancient astrologers and lore masters associated with things at a great distance away, and all things that are foreign and exotic and spiritual is the sign associated with religion, the quest for God, and then it turns out that they discover in like 1930 that the galactic center is right there. And the funny part about the discovery of the galactic center is that the radio waves emanating from the core of the galaxy were picked up by AT&T engineers who were laying transatlantic telephone cable. How's that for a Sagittarius metaphor? Transatlantic, right? Anything overseas, that's Sagittarian. So they're laying these telephone cables under the ocean, and the cables make a big antenna, and they're picking up this signal, and it turns out the signal is coming from the core of the galaxy, and that's how the existence of the core of the galaxy was discovered. I mean, it's hilariously Sagittarian. Okay, so where do I go from here? There is not a hell of a lot going on in Sagittarius right now, but there's a lot going on with the ruling planets of Sagittarius, particularly with Jupiter. It is a big, big, big year for Jupiter. And fortunately for you, there's the activity of Jupiter is in Taurus. It's very grounding. It is, by the way, not easy to be born under the sign associated with all of this cosmic activity. It's like, what the fuck are you doing here? How your sensation of being a visitor. And one of the ideas I developed that would be kind of front and center of a Sagittarius chapter in a sun sign book is that there is a lot of Earth involved in the expression of Sagittarius. So, for example, one of the points I make is that here you have this utterly, where is this? Beyond cosmic influence going on in Sagittarius, great attractor, galactic center, the sign Sagittarius itself. But then, as your second place, you have Capricorn, and this is what, in my view, is the conservative streak in Sagittarians. It's a little like being very experienced at camping and survival skills. To be an experienced camper, you need to be disciplined about how you pack and how you travel, and not if you're climbing up Mount Everest, to not take stupid risks and to be a little bit reserved. And so that's the expression of Capricorn to Sagittarius. The second place is the place of expression of the reference sign. So Capricorn is the second place to Sagittarius. And one of the things that's gone on these years is that Pluto, since 2008, has really done quite a number on Capricorn and dismantled all those structures and left it to you to put them back together. But it's gotten a lot of old ideas out of the way. It is uncluttered. It has uncluttered your mind and left you more free to express your values and your own attitudes as a necessity of growth. So one of the consequences of having Capricorn on the second house, and it plays through to having Aquarius on the third, by the way, we'll get there next, is that that it is given to the adherence to traditional values. And you think, well, why exactly do you need all of these traditional values? Well, the reason you would need them is because they're very important points of adaptation if you live on Earth and don't want to get in trouble on Earth. You've got to kind of do a bit of as the Romans do. This does not stop you from going on bold adventures. It does not prevent your home from being a youth hostel. But the Sagittarians I know are also very particular about their home. That's that. So your values have been radicalized under the influence of Pluto in Capricorn. And one of the influences of Pluto moving through a sensitive spot in the chart like that is it engenders a tremendous degree of independence, of cultivating independence, and of It's a special kind of independence. It's a kind of a hardy, steely independence of thought and also independence of emotional and of not wanting. Independent means not being too dependent on yourself. So it's really Pluto in the second has conditioned you to be extremely self-reliant. Pluto in Aquarius is hopefully going to take you in the direction of bolder adventures and bolder adventures of mind and doing more to break consensus. Those very, by the way, very helpful keywords for Pluto and Aquarius. Because if we don't learn how to break consensus, consensus is going to break us. A lot of people walking around with toxins in their body because they refuse to break consensus. And we're going to be entering times when breaking consensus is very important, key to survival and what you might think of as New Age leadership. Okay, so Pluto has done its work on Capricorn. It leaves tomorrow. There'll be a brief encore of Pluto in Capricorn in Northern Hemisphere autumn in 2020, late basically September through around November 19th of 2024, but it only grazes Capricorn by 1/3 of 1 degree. So it is a kind of a last out in case you need it for all unfinished, unresolved business of Pluto in Capricorn. You should have an idea what that unfinished business is. It may involve something about finances. It may involve doing some touch up on some belief system, philosophy, or whatever, where you must depend upon yourself. But for the most part, those lessons are learned and those things have been set up. Now, Sagittarius has Aquarius on the third place. The third place in astrology is the place of the state of mind, the mental style, the not the belief system, but the application of the belief system. So for example, the belief system, one's belief, I mean, the whole chart describes a belief system, but generally the topic of the belief system is a function of the ninth house. But Sagittarius being the ninth sign, the ninth house is an important place, and this too is self-reliant. You don't want to have anybody else's religion. The red line drawn there, that's house nine. That's the belief system. But opposite the belief system is Aquarius, and that's the application of the belief system. The application of the belief system, they're opposite concepts, international, local and domestic, right? That's kind of opposite concepts. The application of the belief system is in Aquarius. So Leo is a much more independent idea than Aquarius. Aquarius is a much more consensus-driven idea, but they are opposite one another, and that means that the two signs are in the process of an integration experience. One of the best describers of the integration experience is Alice Bailey in Esoteric Astrology. That is a good reason to read and study that book, because she treats the sign pairs as essentially one energy system. And so in your most advanced idea of what is so, of what is true, you're working with Leo as the descriptor of your belief system. But in the local application, the immediate application in terms of thought style, communication style, and general frame of mind, you have Aquarius there. Now, this is a certain kind of high-order intelligence, though intelligence right now is being heavily corrupted by the digital realm, which is coming home to roost in Aquarius, and Pluto's going to help us disrupt and hopefully clean up that whole situation. But the thing about Aquarius is that it's largely dependent upon consensus reality. People really want, with Aquarius involved in one's beliefs and the application of one's ideas, there is a lot about seeming acceptable. It's completely contrary to the ways that Sagittarius thinks of itself and portrays itself. But in the two most important expressions of who you are, the second place, meaning your values, your principles, and your third place, the application of your ideas and the kind of building of the community around you, both Saturn ruled, both very conventional and driven by consensus. But Pluto has worked its way through Capricorn encouraging you to be ever more independent. And then and now Pluto is arriving in Aquarius, and so that consensus obsessed idea of Aquarius and the kind of need to take a vote to make sure that what you are going to express for what you believe, it could be completely different from what you believe, is acceptable to those to whom you're expressing it, very Aquarian. The contrary, now, yes, there is a contrarian streak to Aquarius, but it is easily traded in for a few trinkets of social acceptability, and Pluto, as far as I can tell, is going to enter this territory and let's say it's going to do a little demolition and renovation work on this whole idea of consensus reality, which is very much a factor of Aquarius, and lead you to be independent in a whole new way. In genuinely independent of thought and your ideas. And I'm not saying that you're not, but I'm saying that one of the things that the Pluto and Aquarius transit is about is getting you to question the extent to which the ideas you hold are adaptations of or copies of ideas that others have taught you. And so the Pluto part is going to be about a reframing and a reconceptualizing of your application of your ideas, of your belief framework, and how it's think of it, your ideas are in your mind somewhere, in your aura, your brain, or somewhere like that, but your pen is where they're coming out. And so and how you might write and what you might say. And so the ninth place is Leo. That's the kind of resources up in the cloud, the ideas of the full set of ideas. And then the third is the filter through which they pass, and the style in which the thought style that you express them in. And here's where Pluto is going to rearrange and reroute things, and be prepared for many of your most cherished ideas to be challenged. If you find yourself discovering that you accept any idea that happens to be what a lot of other people accept, that's going to be ready for being challenged. That one is on the block. Okay, so this is all arguing for a revision in the mental environment, and currently the mental environment is heavily driven by digital technology. Previously, the mental environment was driven by television technology. That's really the most recent iteration. And if you've noticed, digital has completely swallowed the entire television environment. You can see almost every show ever made and on TV in digital format, with the sad exception of Mary Hartman. Ah, why can't we see those shows? Under TV conditions, we all became writers and directors. We all thought of ourselves as TV characters, and this explains a lot of behavior. Under digital, everything suddenly is completely disembodied, subject to revision, and even more focused in the global village. There's all this dynamic inter-response, but digital has grossly expanded the problem of consensus reality and disembodiment. And Pluto is here to challenge that mental environment, and I dare to say to teach us to bring a more soulful approach to our ideation and to our communication and to our sharing ideas with others, and not to be so obsessed with acceptability. Who cares if an idea is acceptable? And at this point, I think anyone who speaks out about anything is subject to being canceled a couple of times. So working against cancel culture is not going to solve any problems. Okay, let's see what else we got going on here. One of the in many ways, Sagittarius is the sign of paradoxes, I think. And if a thing in your sign, right at the middle of your sign, that is drawing to it 100,000 galaxies, each containing billions of stars, and no one really knows why, well, that's a pretty good contradiction to begin with. Okay, so the fourth place of Sagittarius is Pisces. Sagittarius finds common cause with Pisces in that they are both qualities of thought, qualities of idea that handle very large concepts. And Sag is the only sign that handles larger concepts than Sagittarius is Pisces, because Pisces handles things that are so large you can't even really give them names. Pisces is the sign of secrets that you keep from yourself. It is the sign of things that are so overwhelming there's really no conceiving of them. Can you really imagine being mayor of New York City? That's a little like what Pisces is about. And the fourth place in astrology, the fourth place is, which side of it is it on here? Let's mark that in like blue so I know in the true mirror. Fourth place for Sagittarius is Pisces. And the fourth place is the ground that you stand on. It's your foundation. It's the it's where you seek security. It is where you draw your strength up from the ground. And so as hardcore as Sagittarius is in some ways, for example, having Pluto as the second place, sorry, Capricorn, where Pluto has been as the second place, that says, okay, you're going to take all these cosmic values and invest them in a belief framework, values, principles framework that is more conservative, similar with the third place being about Aquarius, the consensus reality thing. The fourth, you find some freedom, and where you find that freedom is the freedom to feel what you feel. It is the freedom to have a measure of faith and trust in the unknowable. So, for as secure as you want to be and tend to be in some other ways, and doing a lot of when in Rome, do like the Romans do. Saturn ruled signs on the second and the third. By the fourth, it's like, okay, the one place I need to be free is how I feel. And this has not been the world's easiest scenario over the past 10, 12 years, because Neptune has been making its way through the territory. Neptune is not realistic. It is not given to an accurate perspective on really anything, more easily corrupted than Pisces itself. It is given to distortions created by belief systems, ideologies, drinking, drugs of many different kinds. And Neptune's been there, and this may have led to some distortions. Fortunately, Saturn has arrived. Saturn arrived in the spring of 2023, after approximately three years in Aquarius, that was the lockdown phase. Saturn in Aquarius was the lockdown phase of the world. 4.4 billion people ordered to stay in their homes for computer virus. And then it moved into Pisces. And so moving into Pisces is shifting your emotional perspective. And it is making you want a more tangible approach to your feelings. The feelings are not just energy just flowing completely unbridled and freely. Feelings and emotions need some definition, some tangibility to be useful, to be meaningful, and to not be overwhelming. And I would reckon that with Neptune going through your fourth for many years, 10, 12-ish plus years, there has been quite a bit of being overwhelmed, emotionally overwhelmed by one thing or another. And family matters have unlikely to have been particularly easy. But Saturn, not treated very friendly by a lot of astrologers who don't really know what they're talking about. I mean, to not have Saturn would be to have like a carpenter who doesn't know what a ruler is. I mean, Saturn is the ruler of astrology. It's the reality principle. And so this is getting you to clean up your emotional boundaries and to have a better sense of the tangibility and rationality of your feelings. So it is applying a rational test, a reality check to all that you previously have felt and experienced and all the places where you may have sought security that turned out to not be that helpful. And then I think that's a positive thing. Now, Neptune and Saturn. There's a lot of planets, and I'm not working from a script, so forgive my. It's a little confusing, even Eric Francis. Saturn is a fairly quick planet, 29-year orbit, and Neptune's a fairly slow, I think it's 146-year orbit. They're close together, and Saturn is applying to Neptune, just like the moon applying to the sun late in the lunar cycle, which means there's going to be a conjunction soon. There's going to be a new moon, but the new moon consists of Saturn making a conjunction to Neptune. But that's not going to happen till Neptune has moved into Aries. So for as long as Neptune is in Pisces, Saturn will be in Pisces, giving you this tool, this ability to structure your feelings, to make some compartments, to have some boundaries, and to get a clear, much more clear sense of who and what you are and what makes you feel safe and secure on the planet. Part of the challenge of Saturn entering the fourth with Neptune having been there is finding out that many things you thought made you secure didn't. They really didn't. Maybe they made matters worse. I had a crazy experience when I lived in Saint-Gilles in Brussels. I would travel a lot and would leave a lot of equipment in my rented room. I had a nice little studio apartment in a beautiful place with incredible light. And I once locked my keys in the apartment, right? This is after having traveled for many months to foreign countries, trusting the door. And suddenly my keys are on the other side of the door. So I thought, well, what am I going to do about this? I didn't really want to call the landlord. So in an act of mostly pondering, I leaned on the door. I don't mean I hit it with my shoulder or a battering ram. I leaned on the door kind of like you might lean on the counter drinking your coffee in the morning and the door popped open and the whole door frame fell apart. And I realized, wow, the idea that my stuff was locked in that room, safe and secure, was completely in my mind. In reality, there was no boundary. If all I had to do was ponder a thought and lean on the door and the whole thing pops open and falls apart, I put it back together. And the landlord charged me for damaging the door. He took it out of my security deposit, motherfucker. So this is a little like what it means to have Saturn entering the fourth house where Neptune previously was. And you might find out that, well, the door was not so secure after all. Oh, okay, maybe we need to make some improvements to boundaries and things like that. So you have support in doing this. Now, from there, the action, here's if you thought these previous houses were even equally interesting, now we're starting to get into what's really interesting. Where to begin? We're talking about the fifth place. The fifth place is generally the fun zone of the chart. Five. I'm going to put a little five. It looks kind of like a S from the band Kiss, but here, that's a five. And you'll see if you go to your written reading, you'll see that this is the... you can find this house. And in here, well, fifth house for you is Aries. The fifth place of any sign is going to be the same element as the reference sign. And this is using whole signs. We can have that discussion anytime you want. But for this purpose, I'm using whole signs. Whole sign houses. The sign is the house. And the fifth place or the fifth sign from the reference sign is always the same element as the reference sign. Hence, fire sign, Sag. And then we have earth sign, air sign, water sign, back to fire sign, Sag. So the next fire sign is Aries. By the way, that fire-to-fire thing, approximately 120 degrees, that's where the idea for a trine comes from. The concept of a trine is the same element to the same element. Yes, there can be an out-of-sign trine, but the idea, the original idea at the center of this is that there's a level of ease and flow and translation from one fire sign to another fire sign. And the fifth place, we should really put, it's all in the houses, should be a little resource, Salacia, Lenny Akea video, and it's all in the houses article. One of my best pieces from the golden age of the mountain astrology when Tem Tariqtar, the owner, was my friend and editor, since gone. And it took me a long time to get into the mountain astrologer as a page one writer, but I did it, and with the help of Tem Tariqtar and Nan Geary, my editor. And that's a key to the houses. It's all in the houses. The fifth house or fifth place is the fun zone. It's because children like to play there. So it's a house where children play. And all of the derivative ideas of the fifth house come from some form of play and gaming. And they include casinos. They include financial speculation of any kind, cryptocurrency ruled by the fifth house. They include art in all forms. So the locations of the fifth house are like the playroom and the art studio, fifth house. And the sex in the form of the art studio couch, not sex in the form of the honeymoon bed. That's the eighth house. Ooh, we signed the contract and we've got, okay, now I will finally find out what your dick is like. We've signed the contract. Oh, now I can inherit all your money because I can find out what your dick is like. That's the marriage of that's the sex of the eighth house. It can be interesting. It can have a very compelling quality that goes way beyond the concept of wills and trusts and safety deposit boxes, but the eighth house sex is still a little boring. Fifth house sex is the sense of new. It's like when you were a teenager and you had sex with someone for the first or second time, that sense of, wow, this is what it's like. There's this sense of discovery in the fifth house. And this is what makes artists artists. So the sex of the fifth house is the sex that takes place on the art studio couch. Think about it that way. Would you rather have sex on the art studio couch or in the safety deposit box vault? Now, there are people who would, or the funeral parlor. Who'd rather? And look, I'm open to, you know, everyone can have whatever fetish they want. But the fifth is the art studio. It's the sense of possibility. It's the sense of a place where creation happens, where experiments are conducted, where the unknown is discovered through mistakes. That's the fifth house. It is a place of tremendous discovery. And the first sign, Aries, is in your fifth place. Now, one of my theories of astrology generally, but solar chart astrology in particular, is that where we have Aries in our chart is where we strive to do much of our self-discovery and self-actualization. And you have that planet associated with self-discovery and self-actualization in the fifth, meaning that your creative discovery process is completely integrated with your self-actualization and personal discovery process. And the two are overlaid. And so you do your self-actualization, your very best self-actualization, in the method of creative daring and creative experimentation. Your idea of self-actualization is finding out something about yourself that you didn't know when it's working at its best. Now, this is daring territory for a lot of people. Most people are not that interested in finding out things about themselves that they did not know. But you have a built-in quality where this is just the way that things must be. This is just how it is for you. And it would be quite enough to have Aries there, but planets come and go. And one of the planets coming and going right now is Chiron in the fifth house. Chiron began its journey through Aries in 2018 and takes hold in 2019. So Chiron in Aries, Chiron in your fifth house, is not a new thing, but it comes to a peak in 2024. And one of the ways we know that the Chiron in Aries transit comes to a peak is that there is a total solar eclipse exact to the arc minute. Now, that chart has currently flown the coop, and I'm trying to figure out how that is, because I don't have that many charts here. And I just can't find it. I probably folded it up and put it in a book or something, maybe out in the car. But if you go to the Aries reading and you look up that chart, I show it in both forms, the Aries video and the Aries audio written reading. That eclipse is to the arc minute conjunct Chiron. If you cast the new moon chart, the new moon's always a little bit off from the peak intensity of the eclipse. You will see that the new moon is conjunct Chiron to no arc minutes. It's partile to the arc minute. I've never seen that before. It's basically impossible to have the sun cycle, the moon cycle, the eclipse cycle, the nodal cycle, and then Chiron, five different cycles all lining up conjunct Chiron. That's crazy. And so we are going into a time of full expression of this self-actualization energy of Chiron in Aries. Chiron in Aries drives self-actualization. And it has been doing so. It also drives identity politics. It does both. Just like Aquarius is the sign of contrarian thinking and then also group think. Well, they are functions of one another. And in the case of Aries, there is this radical need for self-expression. Chiron in Aries, radical need for self-expression. But that also has a way of becoming a kind of conformity of self, by the way, driven very much by disembodied digital conditions, which are having their greatest impact on Aquarius and on Aries. And two signs are working in this kind of orbit, 60 degrees apart. So there is some radical awakening to yourself, to your creativity, to your willingness to dare to be you. This is not a thing that is appreciated these days. Now you're courageous, bold, and daring if you do what everyone else is doing. People say, you're courageous and daring, just like all of us. Come, now feel safe in how creative and daring you are. And it's like, wait a second. Have you thought that through completely? So the new moon eclipse, which is, I'm calling the all-American eclipse because it's all in the Americas. It starts in southeastern Canada, cuts its way through Maine, Vermont, New York, must go across New Hampshire before then, and then down through the kind of, I don't know what to call the, maybe, not really the deep south, but anyway, winds up in, a bit of the deep south, winds up in Texas and then Mexico, where there's the peak intensity. This is on April 8th, 2024. And this is one of the, I think, major events of the decade. And these eclipses can be tremendously, tremendously powerful. And you'll read in certain, I don't know what people are saying these days, but till recently, and I hope I help break the mold on this, eclipses last for 6 months. The efficacy of an eclipse lasts for 6 months. Not so fast. I see eclipses active 20 years after the fact. You can tell the eclipse is active because there's an event and there's a planet sitting right in the degree of the eclipse that might have happened in 1999, 19 Leo, but the event 20, 25 years later has very similar themes that the eclipse 20 years ago had, and they're joined by an object in the eclipse degree saying, look there, pay attention, that's that. Go back to that previous chart. And the 8/11/99 eclipse is a massive one, as is 6/21/01, the eclipse, monster eclipse at 8 arc minutes of Cancer, right on the Aries point as a result in 2001. That was the harbinger of 9/11. Massive society-changing thing. Here we have the second eclipse ever to cross the continental United States. Big deal. Aries. Big deal. So 19.5 degrees Aries. It's still an Aries point event. It still has that theme of the personal expanding into the public realm and the public realm reaching into the private realm. And we live with this now because we are all basically quasi-public figures. It's just a fact of everyone having one of these cameras looking at them and like, I too can be NBC News. So there is an adventure indicated by this Aries astrology, and the adventure is one of self-discovery. Now, Chiron can often bring a sense of crisis. Chiron has a critical quality, and I don't mean critical like, you know, he should have played that song in the concert. I mean critical as in critical mass, critical as in turning point, critical as in hinge, critical as in a fulcrum event. When I finally met Rob Hand, the eminent traditional astrologer, I had a plan. I wanted to ask Rob Hand about Chiron. Now, he'd be saying, why would you ask Rob Hand about Chiron? Rob Hand doesn't believe in Chiron. Rob Hand likes to use seven planets. Rob Hand translates all these old books. He out of antiquity. He has his PhD in medieval military astrology that he got at the Catholic American University. So when I finally met Rob Hand, it was at Norwalk or something, and I was like, when I see Rob Hand, I'm going to ask him my one question. Tell me what you think of Chiron. He comes out of an elevator, and I practically tackled him. And I said, Rob, I'm Eric. Tell me about Chiron. And he said, I'll tell you about Chiron. That's Rob. He likes to tell you things. He said, Chiron is the element of the system without which the entire system would collapse, but with which the system functions perfectly. So it's a critical piece. It is a keystone. And there is often a crisis when Chiron is active. And so you may have some kind of self-actualization crisis with Chiron so active in your chart this year. It's going to be active one way or another. There's going to be a lot of self-discovery going on. And a lot of what's going on now that is pretending to be self-discovery under Pluto and Capricorn conditions is not going to seem like so much self-discovery under Pluto in Aquarius conditions. It's going to put that self other thing into high relief. You people don't see the difference between these many different things, including the me of yesterday and the me of today. So in the super hot creative zone of your solar chart, there is going to be this long-lasting total solar eclipse, this moment of awakening. And when you're watching the fireworks go on in society, you're watching things happen you have never seen before and thinking, I cannot understand this. Think eclipse, followed by 12 days later, a mere 12 days later, a major event in Taurus involving the ruling planet of Sagittarius. Then this is the culmination of a program. There will be a double ending to this climactic conjunction of Jupiter and Uranus in Taurus. So Taurus is place number 6 in your solar chart. See, my fingers are there. That's sixth place. You can tell it's the sixth place because if you start in Sag, Capricorn second, Aquarius third, Pisces fourth, Aries fifth, Taurus sixth. 150 degree angle. It's called a quincunx because it's five signs, 150 degrees. And in my view, the signs that are 30 degrees from your sign and 150 degrees from your sign are the most different, because Sagittarius is a mutable fire sign. So its element is fire, and its triplicity is mutable. It's cardinal, mutable, and fixed. It's a mutable sign. When we go to Taurus, Taurus is a fixed earth sign. Different triplicity, different quadruplicity, completely different. The only other signs like that, they are the signs located either right adjacent to your sign. The quadruplicity and the triplicity will be different, or at 150, and that means that those would be Cancer and Taurus. One's water sign, one's an earth sign, different element. One's a fixed sign, one's a cardinal sign, different triplicity. This is one of the reasons why the old astrology textbooks don't like the sixth house. You'll read how astrology very biased against houses 6 and 12 and 8. They kind of have a struggle with the eighth house. And the reason for this is because of this 150 or 60 degree, 30 degree, sorry, relationship. 150 or 30. Both called inconjunct. The word inconjunct has two different definitions in astrology, either a quincunx or a semi-sextile. In any event, Taurus is your house of work, service, expression, health, and well-being. All the service themes of the six are about the military. The military has as its natural house number 6, that service. Then it becomes the house of medical care, because you got to care for a lot of hurt people at the battlefield, and then service generally, and then the healing arts come into the 6, because that's where healing arts tended to concentrate and be kind of find their home in the 6th house. And then All food storage also, for some reason, is contained in the sixth. But also, work, daily work. That's expression, right? That's the expression of service, is the daily work that you do. And this is one of the interesting things about Sagittarius, is it wants a tangibility to work. For as cosmic as the Sagittarius mind is, Sagittarius wants a solidity and a traditional quality to work, and the quality of making things of value. So one of the things you should know, I feel so strongly about that, I'm going to bounce on my chair. Sagittarius will only find satisfaction in work if you are making things of value. Not necessarily even ideas of value, but things of actual value, like a goldsmith might make, or a painter might make. Maybe your painting might not be worth that much today, but it is certainly a thing of value in a very tangible sense, made of a material substance. And you must work in a comfortable environment, in a setting that meets your needs, with like good air and beauty around. You can't work in a cubicle. You need a nice place to work, kind of like this. All right, Uranus has been there since 2018, 2019, phased in, just as Chiron phased into Aries. So this has been a bit of a shakeup of your work life. But it's also helped you break the mold of conventionality that Taurus often hints at. And so there's been I hate the word innovation, right? You're always going to click on YouTube and it's going to be like a really fancy graphic, and they're going to have some Indian guy, ooh, you should join our company, buy our new disc, it's innovation. Well, all right. But Uranus is innovative, and it does shake things up, and Uranus is inventive, but it's also disruption. It is also a break in continuity, and Taurus is all about continuity. So, I'm bouncing. I feel so strongly about that. So, much of the crisis of continuity that we've had lately, which to me often feels like somebody walking into the Metropolitan Museum of Art with a sledgehammer and kind of saying, fuck the patriarchy, and then they smash the display case of all the goddess figures. Fuck the patriarchy. Destroy the goddess. This is kind of where we're at right now. But nonetheless, there is such a thing as reinvention and of rethinking and of breaking convention in interesting ways. That's Uranus in Taurus. So put the sledgehammer away and just, you know, get out your drafting paper. But it has found, Uranus and Taurus in the sixth, has found a counterpart or a stabilizing influence, better to say, in Jupiter entering Taurus. That was last year, around the spring sometime. And now at the end of the Jupiter in Taurus run, it's going to do two very fancy things. It is going to first make a conjunction to Uranus and Taurus. This is your ruling planet, Jupiter, making a conjunction to the planet that is associated with revolutions and things evolving and changing and shifting very, very quickly. Conjunction happens one time on the 20th of April 2024, and that happens concurrent with the Sun entering Taurus on 420, everyone's favorite date, but not birthday necessarily. So on 420, we get this favorite time of day. At 420, Jupiter conjunct Uranus. And there's some burst of awareness that happens. This is happening at the same time, within 12 days on a cosmic scale, is the same time as the eclipse. So the spring is going to move very quickly. And just one thing is going to change after the next. There have been some spring times in history where things happen that quickly. Spring of 70 is an example. Spring of 64 is an example. We're going to have one of those years. So this is suggesting a whole new approach to work and work spaces. You might find yourself thinking, well, I'd really like a new house or a new apartment, but really what I need is a new studio. I need to completely redo my office and get my office working, or not only working, but able to handle maximum capacity. And then, I really do want to have my own pottery kiln. I'm sure you can get one right on Amazon.com. Now, that's some damn fancy fireworks in Taurus. Generally, it's fancy fireworks. It includes the possibility of new collaborations and other things going on like that. And, there's another influence in Taurus I want to call your attention to. And I've written about this in various different times in the past, and that influence is Albion, formerly known as 1992 QB1. I'm going to add that to the list of resources. I've got an article, one of the best, on 1992 QB1, and it went almost 30 years without being named. They just left it with provisional designation. The discoverers were not into notoriety or fame, and finally Dave Jewett said, I better name this thing before somebody else does. So we named it Albion after a figure from Blake, which is about human potential. Albion seems to be some kind of archetypal human, and I always viewed QB1 when that was its incarnation as a gentle luring to your own potential. Not the grow or die kind of influence of Pluto, but a gentle luring, like deer medicine, saying, come beyond what you think you know. Come beyond your previous experience of yourself. Come beyond your previous experience of what you do for work. And Albion remains in Taurus. It was discovered on the Aries point in 1992. It took like 20 years to get into Taurus and recently entered Taurus. And so remember that despite all of this like super intense fireworks of the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, two of the biggest planets, and like one rules your sign in Taurus, there's also Albion saying, come hither. And so it may be the idea that speaks quietly that is the idea that gives you the concept of of what you want to do and what you want to be doing. Okay, so let's see. Here's the double ending. So that really is the kind of major climactic event of 2024 for Sagittarius. And by the way, the events are weighted to the front of the year for some reason. All the big events are concentrated basically between now and this time in July when Saturn makes a conjunction to Nessus. We haven't gotten into that, but I've written a lot about the Saturn and talked about a lot about the Saturn-Nessus conjunction. While I'm on that topic, it really is about finding identifying all the victims in your family tree and saying, I don't want to be like them. What is it that made all these people what they were? Why is it that all these people were so oriented on becoming victims, and to purge yourself of that emotional impulse, which doesn't happen overnight, but anyway. So Gemini, very important sign to Sagittarius. Here again is Sag, first place, and the opposite place is Gemini. So Sagittarius and Gemini work as a system. One is about very cosmic and massive global things, and the other is about things that are very human to twins having a conversation. It's about people. It's about the expression of the cosmos in human form. And That's your relationship house. And so this keeps you, among the many things that keep Sagittarius grounded in the human realm, one of those things that keeps you grounded in the human realm is having Gemini as your opposite house, which deals with relationships. And this is inspiring of communication, inspiring of fraternity, of having neighbors that you trust, of understanding that that much of what we do comes down to how people treat one another. And when Jupiter is finished making its conjunction to Uranus, it's going to soon after move into Gemini, your opposite house and sign. It is almost always fruitful to have Jupiter in your opposite sign because it means that there's abundance coming toward you. But this is, and possibility of new relationship experiences, again, much of this is confirmed in other angles of your chart, particularly houses 5, talking about your being bold enough to potentially experiment in relationships in ways you haven't done, and 6, with Jupiter Uranus, creative collaborations entering your life. But this is a special time for Jupiter to be going into Sagittarius because Sedna, Jupiter going into Gemini, because Sedna is going into Gemini. And Sedna was last in Gemini nearly half a precessional cycle ago, with 11,400 years ago, where I was sitting was under a mile of ice. Right around then, if it wasn't under a mile of ice, there was a heck of a lot of runoff water from the glacial melt-off, because the glacier was only probably about 300 miles at the most north of where I'm sitting. And so there was no civilization in the northern hemisphere. Anything that had previously been particularly like north of New York was crushed and wiped out after being under ice for approximately 2 million years. Then the ice melted. Then Sedna was in Gemini. And so we don't know what this is about. But we do know that Sedna talks about environments. I think that's a fair assessment. My astrological colleagues have done a lot of work on this, and Mike Brown, the discoverer, a Gemini, who says he loves astrologers, and I believe him because he's been very good to us. If Taurus, where Sedna's been since 1966, is about the physical environment of the Earth, Gemini is about the mental environment of the Earth. And so what we are experiencing concurrently with Pluto entering Aquarius, which is very much a commentary on the collective mental environment, well, Sedna enters Gemini, which is a commentary on the interpersonal relationship environment. It is a quality of thought, communication as expressed first verbally and then in writing. And this is about becoming aware of how important the mental environment is. So lately I've been having a lot of conversations with flat earthers. I'm fascinated by these people. And what they are trying to argue is that we have our concept of the physical environment wrong. The Earth doesn't really rotate on its axis, and the Earth does not orbit the Sun, and the Sun does not orbit the galaxy, and God knows what they would say of the Great Attractor, the Milky Way galaxy, Andromeda M87, and all that. They're not Sombrero. We're not all being drawn toward the Great Attractor. How's that possible? No, the Earth is a stationary plane. That is the attempt to qualify the physical environment, completely disregarding the mental environment. Because you can't think about the mental environment unless you're, the physical environment, unless you're thinking through the mental environment. There is no physical environment that is not in some way perceived, documented, recorded, photographed, written about, that is not processed through the mental environment. If the physical environment is about resources, resource depletion, climate change, global warming, whatever else it may be about, What do you have without your ability to think about that? You have absolutely nothing. So I'm making the argument through these videos that the mental environment is supreme. It is the supreme environment because it is what makes any other environment even meekly relevant or meaningful. The concept of relevance and meaning is a mental construct. And now sudden is coming. And sudden is coming to your seventh place. Sudden is coming to your very house of environments and relationship environments. And it is being joined by Jupiter. If there was any question about what sudden was about, since it hasn't been in Gemini for 11,400 years, we're going to find out. Because soon after, within weeks after sudden, about 1 month, sudden enters Gemini, Jupiter comes along and makes a conjunction. Jupiter enlarges. Jupiter tells us what is underneath things. It is the cosmic magnifier, the cosmic expander. I personally think that's very exciting. I think that you are going to be one of the people who is the most able to witness the intrigue of the world as it is becoming and the environment as it is changing. But I can tell you, sitting here on the, what day is it, 19th of January 2024, that on the 20th of January 2025, we are going to be living in a completely different mental construct of the world, a completely different mental environment. And for you, that is your relational environment. And all of this Capricorn, major changes, interior. Aquarius, major changes, interior, but relational. Pisces, major changes, conjunctions happening. Interior, sixth house, your work, that's largely about you. Yes, there's relationships involved, but it's still below the horizon. You're working things in a way that is not necessarily emergent in immediately into the wider environment. But guess what? Jupiter moves, Sedna moves, and the place they move is into your wider relational environment. So you are expanding on the inside, and you're going to be expanding on the outside. And I think that quite exciting times. All right, that is what I have to say to you. Thank you. Thanks for hanging out, for learning and sharing and allowing me to influence your thinking. I really do my best to keep an open mind and not to like drive anyone down any kind of narrow concepts, but rather to show you something about what your possibilities are. I mean, if I want to do nothing else with astrology, I want to express to people something of what is possible. And as Fritz Perl said, learning is the discovery that something is possible. And in that spirit, I sign off from the 2024 video reading for Sagittarius. Thank you. Hello to all the Sagittarians in my life, of which there are many. And I'll catch you around the dial at a different sign, different place, different time. Bye for now.